Performance funding is set to go into effect for this next academic year, and we've talked about this quite a bit in the past year. You mentioned in an address last week that credit progression, which is part of the metrics, does not include dual credits. Given the state-level emphasis on dual credit, this seems to add a caveat that affects all of the state universities. Does this suggest further academic specialization at a university level, or am I reading too much into it?
I think you're reading a little bit too much into it. I think that when we talk about the academic specialization, the progression is really about all students being moving forward in the 30, 60, and 90 areas. The goal is to get students to the bachelor's degree as soon as possible. The dual credit exemption was actually put in by the state legislators, and mainly because of the dual credit processes and where it fits into the different metrics and allowing the students to kind of choose that area. There's other parts where dual credit may or may not count. That's still being discussed in terms of, like, for example, total credit hours and those type of things. But for reasons that the legislators had, they did exempt it from the progression. And again, mainly because of the role of the K-12 in that process and various other things.
Does dual credit put a financial pressure on post-secondary institutions, or is there a greater enrollment tuition revenue opportunity?
It puts on a financial pressure for universities. First of all, our tuition that we're able to charge on the dual credits under the current existing model is one-third of the community college rate, which is off a lot less than what we charge. We're charging right now the per credit is around $54 a credit, so it's significantly reduced. And then those are credits that are earned before they come to Murray State. So there is or any of the universities, so there is a fiscal pressure point on that. Is it substantial and causing an overall burden? No, that's not the case at all. But it is not a cash cow. It is not a revenue generator for the universities at all. But it is the right thing to do that provides a pathway for students to earn prior to coming to the university. It increases their likelihood of success, their likelihood of graduating within a reasonable period of time, and those type of things. I think a key thing that we need to continue to stress with regards to dual credit, there's a lot of dual credit options out there. There's a lot of things that the students can take as they are given the plethora of opportunities with dual credit. I think it's important that we continually to advise, and we as not only universities, but K-12 and also the parents and others need to be involved in this discussion point, is what is the goal of the student? Is their goal just to take a bunch of credits, or is their goal to actually create a quicker pathway towards graduation? Because not all dual credits will be transferred to the university, and not all dual credits will then be utilized for a student's particular major or those type of things. So I think that the students themselves, as juniors and seniors taking dual credits, need to be thinking about, where's my ultimate goal? Is my ultimate goal to go to a university and be a political science major and be part of this 3+3 program that we just talked about? And if so, the courses at dual credit that I need to be taking will align with that trajectory and that pathway. Or is my goal just to right now get used to the college experience, don't know what my major is, and so I could be a little bit more wide open. But again, understand that the dual credits I need to be focusing on are those that are going to be, that will be used by the university as general education courses or things along those lines. We've had several students have come, and this is not just at Murray State, but at many universities, where someone will come in with a lot of dual credit, but a lot of those credits are appropriate for the community college, are outside of the trajectory that they chose to go into. So again, it's about advising. It's about being thoughtful. It's about saying, what is the ultimate goal? And I think that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind, too, with the dual credit.
Kentucky Education and Workforce Development Secretary Hal Heiner recently delivered a speech at Murray State in which he outlined broad potential education reforms. There's a lot to unpack in this speech. What were some of your takeaways?
there is a lot to unpack, and I really appreciate the secretary for coming to Murray State University and having the opportunity to listen to him firsthand, unfiltered, if you want to call it that way, with some of his ideas. and some of his goals for higher education. And I think that there's a lot of things that that he said that I agree with, and I think that are important. For example, one of the things that he led off with his speech is something that I've talked to talk about frequently as well, and that is the dramatic increase of technology. He didn't quote this, but basically he was using Moore's Law, which is that technology will double every year. And Moore's Law was Mr. Moore was the founder of Intel, and his goal was to double the amount of computing capacity on an inch-by-inch square every 2 years. Moore's Law has taken off, and it's being done about every 6 to 8 months now, and it's only going to increase. And so what does that mean for education? What does that mean for society? What does that mean for our current students as well as they go into graduation and into their career field? I also talk about, too, the Fuller curve. The Fuller curve is how often knowledge doubles. Before it was 500 years, before it was 250 years, now it's down to less than 4 years, and it's projected that by 2025 to be around 6 months. And again, what this is about is how we in higher education specifically prepare our students, and now it's soon to be graduates, to not only have technical skills, but also skills that and talents, more aptly, talents that will allow them to deal with ambiguity, to deal with the dynamic pace of change, the rapidness of change, and that will only increase and significantly increase the ability to communicate across borders, the ability to communicate to individuals who do not look like us, who do not have the same paradigms, do not have the same belief systems in our efforts. And how do we take the information at hand and realize that it's only part of the information and make cognizant decisions through logical thought process and determine what is apropos and what is not apropos? It is dealing with, dealing with ambiguity, dealing with the significant change. And to me, that's where higher education really comes into. That, again, we're not just teaching the technical skills. We are actually developing talents within our students, the talents of mindset of research, the mindset of communication, the mindset of asking questions and being able to divest in the answers and determine where do we fit in and making those decisions. One of the things that Mr. Heiner talked about was blurring the lines between high school and post-secondary, be it college or whatnot. And I understand exactly what he's referring to, and I think that it is that it needs to be that seamless transition, and that's an important part of how do we continue to work with our K-12 partners, and they are partners. We need to be in this together, ensuring that the students who are wanting to go to a post-secondary education like at Murray State University are prepared academically, socially, that they understand the rigors that are going to be ahead of them, that they have the math skills, the English skills, the reading skills that are so very, very important, the persistence levels that needs to be so very, very high, the self-discipline that they will need to go through finals week, which we're doing right now. Those are the things that we need to continue to work with K-12, and having that sense of blurring is so very, very important. I think that one of the things that I firmly believe in higher education and talk to all the graduates throughout, and I'll probably mention again on Saturday, is higher education is not to prepare you for your first job. That's not what we're here for. We're not here just to give you a skill so that you get that first job. What our job is to make sure you have the talents that you will have a livelihood that is constructive and that is productive and that benefits society as well as the individual. We are preparing you for a career, and probably nowadays careers as in plural, because of the transformation of technology, the transformation of knowledge, and the leadership that we're trying to teach and impart in all of our students.
Kentucky Labor Cabinet representatives were recently here in the region, and Communications Director Jared Hensley said, "Our secondary institutions and post-secondary institutions aligning their curriculum to meet the needs of local and regional employers, that's essential. So when you're in high school, you can see your career path ahead of you." And Deputy Labor Secretary Mike Nemes made some references to forced electives outside of majors, for instance, a music class for someone going to school for X-ray imaging. Should there be a more direct point A to point B alignment in university coursework?
I think point A to point B alignment in life is also is not direct. It is a wide, vast array. The goal of higher education obviously is to impart certain skills individuals so that they can perform at a functional level. But we're also talking about training individuals for a whole life and also the whole soul. When I look back on all my college career. When I look back and think about the various classes, there are obviously, I think every student would say, well, there's, why did I take that one class? But some of those one classes, I thought, why am I taking this, a philosophy class, has actually provided an opportunity for me to think about things differently, to look at problems differently, to look at the environment in a different light. And when we think about music, it's not just about the music, it's about the creative abilities that go into that process. And we always use this cliche, I got to think outside the box. I got to think anew. I got to think about this differently. The creative pursuits and the art pursuits are one of the best ways that actually teaches individuals and imparts the talents of individuals to look at things differently, to look at things from a different perspective, to look at it from not only a different perspective of oneself, but also to be able to look at it from the different perspective of other individuals. And so, again, as we think about creating the whole person, the whole idea, those classes that sometimes we think, a music degree is not needed for an engineer, there's a lot of elements that play into that, a lot of elements that play into those creative pursuits. One of the world's greatest inventors was Da Vinci. Excellent in science, excellent in math, but also an amazing artist and very creative and able to take things from the art world and play it into the inventions that he's created. To me, that is the epitome of what we're trying to create. And the ability that he brought and the importance of math to the arts and the importance of arts to math. And to me, that is what we're all about. Recently, on Honors Day celebration, one of the Professor Gibson out of the math department gave us a snippet of one of his lectures about how to measure the circumference of the world and how it was done. I think the time frame was around 300 BC, and how the individual was able to do it through a creative process based on learnings from art, that he was actually within about 50 miles of the circumference of the world, where we didn't have maps, we didn't have satellites, we didn't have geosciences, but he had a creative opportunity based on art and applied the math science to that. And so to invent the impossible was art and math coming together. And when Professor Gibson presented that and walked us through the process, even I got it. And that was that in itself was the impossible. But it was so very, very instructive to hear him go through that with, again, matching the arts, matching the music, matching the visual arts, and to come in within 50 miles. And of course, they weren't miles back then. They were called stadias, which he went into the historical context about. But again, that is the power of creative thought, and that is why sometimes that music class that we all, art appreciation, music appreciation, at the time may seem irrelevant, but it creates the whole person, and hopefully we'll strike a creative insights that will be able to be used to solve a problem 15 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later.